Welcome to Couch Lobsters, the film and series podcast made by amateurs for cinema enthusiasts. The concept is simple. We assign each other a film or a series to watch and keep our opinion secret until the day of the recording. Beware, this podcast is full of spoilers. Hello, Dima.
Hi, Jess.
How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic, as always. Yeah,
always fantastic.
Always fantastic.
Have you done your homework? Have you watched the whole Fargo?
I watched both the Fargo and and Layer Cake.
I think it's just Fargo.
All right.
Because it's a town, right? I like that we know so much about it. What is Fargo? What does that mean? I think it's a town, Fargo, in Minnesota. I might be wrong. People can correct us. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Fargo is a town. If it isn't, it is.
I think it's. But we're talking. But that was in season one, right?
Well, in the movie as well, right? The old. Although I don't know if the movie was called Fargo. No, I.
Was there a movie? I don't know.
I thought it was just a show.
Okay.
No, well. It was a movie prior to being a show. Love it.
This is gonna be great.
We did say it was made by amateurs, so
yeah. All right. So is it safe to say that we're starting off with Fargo? Yes.
It doesn't matter, honestly. Yeah, let's do Fargo because we're talking about it right now. So yeah, let's do Fargo first.
Well, that's mighty Christian of you.
Oh no, this has nothing to do with that book. It's an older text. Written on stone tablets. In the age of the skull fuckers.
Did Nadine put you up to this?
Please. She's a Girl Scout. I fight my own battles and you need to pay for what you've taken.
So you want me dead?
No. I want you alive for a very, very long time. But while you live, I want you to feel everything your wives felt. Every blow, each humiliation, fear.
I'm not afraid of you.
It's not me you need to be afraid of.
All right, so... Fargo, it's specifically the homework was to watch the latest season 5. So the season 5 is set in Minnesota and North Dakota in the fall of 2019. So it starts with Juno Temple as Dorothy or Dot. I don't know. Have you heard like her being called Dot?
Yeah, at any point? I think her husband called her Dot a lot.
Was it? I don't know why. I never actually focused. Like, for me, it was like Dorothy, and there were... Okay. Well, anyway. And seemingly typical Midwestern housewife, her being at what we first see her. And at some point, her mysterious past comes back to haunt her. After she lands in hot waters with authorities on episode 1. So John Hamm starts as North Dakota Sheriff Roy Tillman, who has been searching for Dorothy for a very long time. So this is pretty much the basic premise of the show. Our favorite stats. IMDb has this season at... Well, to be honest, I don't know if it's the season or the whole show, because I couldn't see a specific stats, but like for just season 5. So mm-hmm. they listed as 8.9 overall. They do have like listings for like episode specific, but yeah, so let's just say that it's 8.9 for the Fargo, the show.
Right, yeah.
And what I have here, it's a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes. So pretty good ratings. So yeah, the show is rated for TVMA, means for mature audiences. For the right reasons. Mm-hmm. The runtime, the average, it's like about 45 minutes per episode, and we have 10 episodes for the show. The show first got released in November of last year and finished in January of this year. So very recent. So it's a pretty new show. In terms of genre, we have crime and drama, which is, I think it's pretty on point. It is crime, drama, maybe a thriller to some degree.
A bit of a thriller.
Couldn't find any stats on the like budget or like grossing, but I think typically like they would report those when it's a movie. I don't think I've ever seen like how much a show grossed if it doesn't have like a cinema theatrical. Damn it, I can't speak today. Release. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also couldn't find a budget. But in terms of like actors, who we have, as I mentioned, Juno Temple.
Yeah.
Temple, yep. Temple. Who plays Dorothy. Mostly famous, I would say, for me, it would be like Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
She played like one of the main characters there. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen a movie called Palmer.
I don't think so. I have, no.
It's a pretty good movie. It's on Apple TV. So these are the two, like a show and a movie that she stands out to me for. I don't think I've watched her like on IMDb. I saw her page, but nothing really stood out besides those two.
She was in the Dark Knight Rises. She was Anne Hathaway's friend that was living with Catwoman. But she doesn't have a big role in that, but I remember her from that. And I guess, Ted Lasso, she has a main role, so obviously that stands out for sure.
Yep. Next, in terms of, like, big characters of the show, so we have, like, Jon Hamm, who mm-hmm. plays the sheriff. In terms of him, he has a big... Like, you see his face and you know him from, like, somewhere. But, like, in terms of, like, main characters, I don't think you've... Like, to me, I don't think you've ever played any main... So, like, recently, I've seen him in Top Gun. So, he played the latest mm-hmm. Top Gun Maverick.
Cyclone, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And then he played in The Morning Show, or Morning Wars. And I think it's on Apple TV, the show.
Okay.
So he played
in the... mostly famous for the show, the thing with the advertising people in the 60s. I forgot the name. It's not Watchmen, but it's something with men, isn't it? Is the thing... Oh, God. I have to bring up his thing. Jon Hamm.
If it is, like, I haven't seen it for sure.
No, for
sure.
It was, like, super... Super popular at the time, but it's quite old now. But Mad Men.
I don't know. I don't think I've seen that.
Sure. It was a series, and it ran for many seasons. And he was one of the main characters in that. So that's how I discovered him. But after that, it's true that he's not had many leading roles. But I've seen him consistently on
You see him
a
lot.
Long time.
You see him a lot. Because, like, looking at his IMDb page, definitely he does a lot of stuff, but never anything, like, recently, never anything, like, major that you're like, oh, yeah.
No.
Like,
No.
So, yeah, I've seen him a lot, but not nothing, like, major. But definitely, like, a really good role in here. Like, I think the role definitely suits him. Next, we have Jennifer Jason, who plays Lorraine Lyon, who's
the mother-in-law.
The mother-in-law. Again, I've seen her somewhere.
Dude, come on. She's mega, mega known. She was also in the Quentin Tarantino movie, The Hateful Eight, the one with...
What?
Yeah, the one where they all stuck in, like, a cabin.
I remember.
Yeah, she's the woman,
I remember
like,
the movie.
That's been arrested.
What? I don't remember.
Yeah, because one of the guys is walking. He's got a prisoner that he's taking somewhere, and the prisoner is a woman, and that's her.
No clue. What are you talking about?
Oh my
and
God.
I remember. I remember the movie. I remember they were stuck in a snowstorm in a cabin, but I have no idea what happened. Like throughout the like, I don't remember anything. But.
But she's been in so much stuff, like
yeah, exactly, exactly. I couldn't. I've seen her in so many. I was like, she has a very familiar face.
But, yeah.
Like I couldn't really point to anything specific. I'm like, I've seen you.
Okay.
But I have no idea where I've seen you. Yeah, and same goes for like another, like her son, who's played by David. Ristol, who's the son, never saw him in anything. I don't know.
No.
Unless,
no, I didn't know that guy. For me, it was her Juno Temple. And the guy who plays Ole Munch, his face, like the weirdo, like the super
Character.
Seen before. And I And I don't know what he was in. Apparently, it was in like a movie called Submarine by Catherine Bigelow, but I haven't seen that.
No.
He was in the also The Hurt Locker, which was also Catherine Bigelow. Defiance in 2008. I don't think I've seen any of these movies, but I know his face and I just can't place him. Snow White and the Huntsman. Or maybe I remember him from there.
Hmm.
I don't know. He's got a very interesting face.
Yeah, a lot of people, like same, another, I think one of the main guys would be the Joe Keery, who plays the son of the sheriff. He's another one of those that I've seen somewhere in a bunch of stuff, but I couldn't like, at the beginning, I'm like, okay, where did I see you? So only Stranger like going things. To like IMDb, yeah, IMDb, I'm like, oh yeah, shit, you were in Stranger Things.
I did not recognize him at all. Because now I'm seeing as
really,
picture. Yeah, from Stranger Things, and I'm like, oh yeah, the cute guy, the nice one. But in this show, he's such a horrible character, and his hair is different as well. Yeah, I did not place him at all. Oh wow, okay, that's him.
I knew, like to me, like again, like a very familiar face, and like. But I couldn't. And then I'm like going to the IMDb page. I'm like, yeah, fuck you. You played in the Stranger Things.
Yeah. It was also in Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds. But Ryan I don't remember. Yeah,
exactly. So I saw that too. I'm like, Free Guy. And so I watched the trailer. Because I remember the show, the movie, sorry. But I don't remember where he played it there or what role was he. So... I think maybe he played, like, because the movie had a bunch of, like, voice actors as well, like, voicing a bunch of, like, characters. So maybe, because I don't remember actually seeing him in the movie.
So. No. No.
Yeah.
Unless he was one of the tech guys, you know, because where Taika Waititi was the boss, like, the company who made the game. Because I kind of feel like I remember him as being one of the tech people that was helping... The woman, Jodie Comer's character. I don't know. But yeah, I don't remember that movie at all, so there's no point.
Mm.
Yeah. He is interesting. Like, I'm excited to see what he does next because he surprised me in Fargo to a point that I completely didn't realize he was the same guy from Stranger Things.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think he could have a good career. He definitely has some range. So, yeah, one to watch.
Yeah, for sure. So while we're on a topic of characters, who was your favorite character throughout the show?
Ooh, I knew this was coming, and I think I set. Obviously, I love the character of Juno Temple because, yeah, it's a very strong female protagonist. Mm-hmm. That's going to work for me. But I think the character I love even more was the mother-in-law, so Jennifer Jason Leigh's character. I just adored her because at first I didn't, But she was interesting to me. I could tell there were many layers to her, but she came off as this rude-ass woman. Of course, a powerful, successful woman who is used to using the money she has to just make everything go her way. So basically, it's her way or the highway. And at first, she's not very likable at all. But as the show progresses, she shows more and more that she has values at her core. She's not just a ruthless bitch, no. And the lengths to which she's going to go at the end to make an evil man pay for his crimes, I was just like, you are the queen. I will revere you for the rest of my life. Yeah, I think she was for me the best character, but I think also because the progression of the character was kind of a slow burn. And when you get to that ultimate episode to see who she actually is, and like in that moment where she goes to the prison to visit John Hamm's character and she has a long speech, and I just was like, this also, I love the actress, to be fair, and she plays this character really well, but to me she was definitely the most, maybe not the most interesting, because that I think Ule Munch, the weird character that you don't know where he's from, he seems to be this guy who's lived for centuries by feeding
on the sins. He has this like very weird wife.
Yeah, he's a crazy interesting character because you want to know what's his deal. Like, where is he from? What does he want? Also, yeah, definitely, what does he want? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't seem clear why he got involved with this, and it seems fairly clear soon enough that he wants revenge because he's been wronged by the sheriff and his son, and he wants revenge on them, but at the same time, he's still hunting Juno Temple's character, and I was like, what do you want? What's your deal? So I loved him, and I think the mystery surrounding him made him like a very important part of the show.
Yeah.
But sure. Jennifer Jason Leigh for me was the standout. I loved her character so much. I wish all women could be like that ruthless when they are faced with like an evil man. So yeah, I knew you was gonna ask me. So I was thinking yesterday and the day before, I was like, who would be, because it's hard to choose for me. Juno Temple's character is great because she's not your run-in-the-mill, you know, housewife. She's so strong and so capable. And I loved her, but Jennifer Jason Leigh is a step above. Like, yeah. What about you, though?
Yeah, like, she definitely, because I feel like the show has a few storylines, like, or mini sort of storylines, right? So we have, like, that Juno's, like, Dorothy's storyline where, like, her present, her past, like, how she got, sort of what happened in between, how she ran away, we later find out, right? We have then the story for the Roy Tillman, right? So we find out that he's, like, it's a whole line of Tillmans, right? Like, being, like, ruthless, like, he's like politician, sheriffs. I think like apparently towards the end we find out that everyone in the family was named Roy, but the son. Right. We kind of, there's that story for the who was that, the policewoman, the deputy. You know,
I forgot about her a little bit. Yeah, she's great as well, though.
Yeah,
who investigates kind of like why Juno was attacked, and Juno Temple's character Dorothy wouldn't even press charges. She was like, nothing happened, nothing. I wasn't kidnapped. And the policewoman thought, that's strange, because there's video of you being attacked in a service station. That wasn't
me. And so she has like this also,
her like, husband, right?
Sort of her husband, like, right, how she kind of goes through all this, like, sort of like abuse, being like,
of course,
being used for by the husband. So it seems like the show has like a bunch of like these mini storylines, but like in general, like it seems like the show also goes into like these women storylines, portraying like women or like how they're being abused by men. like a mm-hmm. lot of times, right?
Yeah.
We don't know that much about the Jennifer's character, because I don't think they mention anything towards
no,
that,
but
why
what's
she became strong.
Is that you can see clearly that in her house, she is the master of the house. I don't mm-hmm. remember if we see her husband. I feel like he comes yeah. down for the picture at the beginning, like the family picture with the guns. And I was like, what's going on? Because it's a Christmas picture that they're going to send to the family.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
pose next to the tree and the fireplace, but then they all have AK-47s in hands. And I was like, all right, that's different. It's definitely Republican. But
yeah, all those stories, like women, so it was great, and I do agree with you that Lorraine, like I at the beginning I didn't like her character, but
of
towards the end, yeah, towards the end, like we learned so much about her, which was great, like, and obviously like Dorothy's was. Like, I think by far the most interesting character to me.
Okay.
But with that said, if I were to put a second best character, I think to me it was the lawyer guy.
He's so retarded, though, because I have in my notes, I don't have many notes, but why did he think it was a good idea to go and confront Roy by himself? Not telling anyone he was... Like, of course he was going to get shot. That lawyer,
well,
right?
Well, maybe... Yeah. I like him? Because he was like... There's been, like, several times where he kind of, like, went above and beyond.
Sure.
He was to get things done. You know, like, he's, like, one of those people who, you know, like, get shit done.
For sure. He's good.
Like, he impressed me, like, especially like the last thing where he, you know, hired three guys, changed the name legally.
That was great.
Yeah, and then they put them onto the because
the
I think like when Lorraine said, hey, you have to go win the election or something like that, or steal, she said like you have to go steal the election from the sheriff.
Yeah.
I thought that he's gonna be the one
votes away from the boxes or something.
No, I thought he's gonna be the one like going on stage and actually like
she
wanted to put him in charge of the county or whatever, just like to make Roy, but then I think what he actually did, you know, like hire those three people, and I think it was so funny, and like I wasn't expecting that, I guess.
No.
So, yeah.
The worst part is that we see him going to the mayor or wherever that you have to go to change your name legally. And we see him there with three dudes. And at that point, we're like, it doesn't register why he's doing that. And it's only later when there is a scene about a debate with all the candidates and Roy Tillman shows up, and then it's like... And facing Roy Tillman, there's going to be Roy Tillman and Roy Tillman and Roy Tillman. Yeah. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? And it was just such a smart move. And you had the clues, but I didn't piece it together until I saw the scene. Yeah, that was
so
really funny.
That's why I like him. He was like one of those that definitely goes above and beyond.
Yeah.
But yeah, with that scene where why he went, because he wasn't planning on going, right, until he saw that other deputy guy, Whit Farr, who also dies at the end. So it was only because of, so after, do you not remember? Like, cause after like that debate finished, he was like the lawyer guy, he was going home. And as he was going home, he was standing at the gas station, and then that Whit Farr.
Yeah, the cop, the...
Yeah.
The nice one, yeah.
Yeah, the nice one. So he saw him, like, gas up, and he's, like, approached him, and he said, like, hey, Dorothy is at the sheriff's house. Like, you have to do something. So I think he went there because of him, but I think he went there... He wasn't expecting to get shot, because I don't think he was... He knew that the sheriff... Because the sheriff, It's not like he knew that he was set up by this lawyer guy. So I think
the lawyer guy was an idiot, because clearly he knows, because he's so close to Lorraine, the mother-in-law, and they know that the Juno Temple's character Dorothy has been attacked, kidnapped. People have been trying to kill her for a while. They burned like the house. So the lawyer, he knows exactly what Roy Tillman, the sheriff, is capable of, and he still believes, oh, I could just go talk to him. At least take a gun. Like, it's America. Just get a gun from Walmart or something. I don't know. It's easy. Just get one. Yeah, so I thought that move was so dumb, especially for a character that was so smart. Nah. And but then that character, though, the lawyer, reminded me a whole lot of the kind of the same character in the show called The Fall of the House of Usher. I don't know if you've watched it, also on Netflix. And there's a character played by, I forgot his name, that's terrible, the guy who plays Luke Skywalker in the old Star Wars, the original. Damn it. What? Are you serious?
I don't remember. No, I mean, like, I know, like, I can picture him, but I don't remember.
Oh, no. Luke Skywalker. Google Hulk. What's his name? Oh, that's Mark Hamill. Jesus. Okay, yeah, Mark Hamill. Yeah. So Mark Hamill plays a lawyer in the show The Fall of the House of Usher. And it's the exact same character. It's a guy that you can just ask, do this, and he will find ways. Not always legal, but he will find ways to do it. And it's kind of super mysterious and interesting. But yeah, I love the lawyer up to the point that he died like an idiot. I was like,
it was stupid, but yeah, I felt really bad like for him dying. But
yeah, I suppose.
I also felt like it was a good... Like, I felt bad for him dying as a character, but also it felt like a necessary. I was like, okay.
A necessary death. Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt sad because I felt like the mother-in-law and him had a better relationship than she had with her husband, most likely. Because you never see the husband. It doesn't really matter in that household. And I felt like her dynamic with her lawyer was like they were... super close, and I feel like she probably needed him at her side. But at the same time, by the end of the show, she does win a new collaborator, because the policewoman basically is so capable, so smart, that Lorraine recognizes in her enough skills and talent that she offers her a job for a lot of money. And because the policewoman, I forgot her name, that's kind of annoying, in the show...
I mean the Indira.
Because she's been living for so long as like the main provider in her family, because her husband is useless. All he does all day is cheat on her, he plays golf in like their basement with like the screen and and he doesn't earn any money and he's never happy with her. It's like, oh, you don't cook me enough food and we never have sex anymore, and you're not there for me, you don't give me but it's like you're doing nothing all day. Like, I just fucking hated him.
So
at that point the Indira realizes, I could make so much more money, pay all of my debt, and work for a very strong woman and do something. I didn't think she was gonna take the job. I thought that her morals
I thought so too. Like first I'm like, I thought she might stay as a cop.
Yeah.
But I think like, and to be fair, I think she may have, because it was only after she met Lorraine, I think it was the next day she came home or something, and then she found her husband cheating on her.
Yeah.
And I think if she hadn't found out that, and you know, like a day before that, if that husband hasn't told her pretty much that she's shit, she's not a good wife. Maybe,
I was so angry.
Yeah, maybe she would have, like, her morals could have like won, and she might have stayed as a cop. But then again, like, even before that, you know, when Dorothy asked her to not tell anybody, and she like she that did. She saw her, that she gave her the like her daughter, you know, like, there's already, like, some morals are shaken.
Yeah.
So yeah, at first I didn't think that she's gonna take the job, but like after all those things, you know, like the cheating husband, like the husband calling her shit, I'm like, okay, potentially.
Also, I feel like maybe what made her choose to take that job was the fact that as a police woman, she felt like she could never get the job done. There were too many hurdles in the way for justice to be done. And I feel like she felt maybe if she worked for Lorraine, you have no limits. Lorraine doesn't care how you do things. You can just do them. And I feel maybe part of her was like, maybe this way justice can be served, you know, served. Because there is not a 380, a 160. The moment she takes the job, and then the scene in the prison where Lorraine goes to confront Roy Tillman, mm-hmm. so John Hamm's character, Indira is there as well in the scene. She's a little bit back, she's standing up, and she's a bit behind, but she's there as well. And I think she's happy to see that such an evil man is going to get what he deserves, and she wants to be part of the judgment. I'm not saying it's a good way to go about things, but I feel like, and that's probably why the show resonated so much with me, because like you said, it talks a lot about the different dynamics of abuse when women are victim of abuse, basically, but it doesn't always mean physical abuse. It can be different things. So of course, that's going to be something that I care about. And I feel like for her as well, I feel like her character wanted to stand up for women. And she felt that if I work for this powerful woman who won't let a man tell her what to do, she can also help other women. And I think that's why part of it too. But I don't know. I'm reading this into the entire show. It's not said. It's not explicitly explained. It's just part of me thinks maybe that's why. It's like a woman working for a woman and like standing together against not just evil men, but in this show, it's mostly evil men, to be fair. Because, yeah, the character of Roy Tillman is the worst of them all, because he's not only physically abusive, but he's also sexually abusive. He's all of the abusives. It's very hard to like him. I do think John Hamm plays this character so well. Yeah. Because you hate him, but when he was on screen, I was mesmerized just because his character was so far out of anything I can comprehend in terms of like, how can you consider women's like this? How does that even happen? How does your brain function? And he played it so well that I just, I wanted to see more scenes with him. I was like, oh, I need, and also part of me was like, when are you going to get your, you know, comeuppance? It's time you get fucked. And you have to wait a long time for that, because even at the end where there's the assault on his ranch, I thought he was going to die. He doesn't. And so I was like, oh, that's a bit annoying because he's the worst and I would like for him to get something worse than prison. But he does, thanks to Lorraine. Yeah. And that was, I was like, oh, I love her so much. I just do. I love her. She's my queen. Yeah. So yeah, for sure, this show resonated a lot. I binged it. I watched it in 2 days. So I just needed to know the conclusion. And also, like I said, there are characters that are mysterious. Like, first off, Juno Temple. So Dorothy, the first episode is smart because it doesn't reveal a lot. The first episode, well, you don't understand, but you know enough. By the end of the first episode, you know enough about characters that you want to keep watching, but everything is still super mysterious and you want to know more. And I think it was a smart way to do a pilot because you give us a lot. They give us action in that first episode. They give us good acting, mystery, and just very photogenic characters, because Ule Munch or Munk is there. And I want to know more. And then, her character was interesting, but at some point you kind of guess what's going on with her. It's not a mystery that's going to last for it's going to last for half the season. But soon enough,
but there was like different mysteries, right? Like, because in the beginning, I think first episode, we find out like something is definitely off, because like this lady, Dorothy, is like very handy with tools. You know, like, and the way she escaped the supermarket, you know, and like how she did her like home like almost like those Home Alone vibes. I'm like, why is she good with this shit, you know?
Yeah.
And then like,
is she John Wick? Yeah, like, that's what I thought. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like by episode two, like she sets up like those really, you know, like badass fucking traps, and then we find out that she's like, so that's like mystery one, why, you know, like, but then in episode two, we find out that like, hey, she previously apparently was married, you know, like, so like, again, like that's a second mystery. So not only that apparently she was married, but also she, for some reason, she's good with like her hands, right? And then like some of that stuff, and like even later on, like that, like we see how smart she is, and not just like hands, but like she, I think like what impressed me was like one of the scenes when she changed the names of the street, you know, like on the signs. I'm like, what? Like,
how do you think like, of that?
No,
I wouldn't have survived the first attack, to be fair. But like the things she thought of when she was. Trapping her house, so, changing the street name seems like such a smart thing to do and a logical thing to do, but I would never think to do that. To be fair, I live like in a cul-de-sac, so that would not, it wouldn't work. I like also don't think we have road signs in England. It's like, do you have GPS? Oh, good luck.
Let me get my map old school book, you know, like one of those booklets.
I know, when you're old school, can you read a map? I know I could in the past, but like I can't even. Yeah, it wouldn't work at all in Orus. I don't know, in Australia maybe it would. Do you have like street signs?
Yeah, we do, like I think every street has a like a sign, pretty sure.
But are they like on pillars or are they like drilled into houses?
Yeah, so some into houses, and some you have like on the crosses, so similar as to what she did. But yeah, like that was a very fucking smart to do that.
That was like
very
smart.
Yeah, very fucking impressive.
And even the traps in the house were pretty good. Like I would just put some broken glass on the floor or something.
Home Alone vibes, you know?
Yeah, Home Alone, but like, I think it's interesting. Well, it's maybe a good thing to say to people, this isn't exactly for kids, right? The violence is super graphic in this show. That surprised me because I watched two seasons of this show before, and I know I loved it, but I didn't remember it was this violent. Or like this graphic, although I loved it, I was love it, that's good. But so yeah, I wouldn't recommend you watch this with very young kids, because like all the traps were no pretty kids. Grim. Maybe no kids. Well, I mean, if you're 16 years old, I think you could watch this. You wouldn't be traumatized. And I think it might be interesting to show this to you young girls, not young 10 year old, but like if you're 16, you probably have seen horror movies, right? Yeah. I don't think this is worse than a Saw or Hostel.
Yeah. I mean, because the show is rated TV, like, mature audiences. So I think because that's a rating below the R, right? Because R is supposedly, like, 18 plus.
18, yeah.
Whereas this is, like, a rating below that. So it is probably, like, 16 plus or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, what's most shocking isn't exactly the violence on screen. So, like, yes, there's going to be a lot of blood and violence on screen, but I think what's more traumatizing and probably scarier is, like, what's not shown per se, but the understood abuse that took place between Dorothy and the Roy Tillman, so her ex-husband, I suppose, but I don't want to call him her husband because he basically married her when she was 15 against her will. So, yeah, dude, you're not married, you're a rapist. And I think that's the hardest pill to swallow for me. And I don't know if it says a lot about our society that I don't care seeing a lot of blood or, you know, body parts flying everywhere. But as soon as we're talking about abuse, then I get a bit squeamish. I just, for me, the because you understand the extent of the abuse, it's not exactly, there's no flashback scenes really where you show him hitting her, raping her, doing all these things. There is a little flashback, but it's like a puppet show sort of thing, so it doesn't, the impact is slightly different. But then I don't know, the realization of what she went through is a lot for me. And that is probably also why the rating is what it is. Of course, there is violence on screen, but I think also the understatement of abuse, you have to be careful with that. You can't expose everybody, very young people, to that, because it's a lot, I think. But that's maybe just me personally. I think, yeah. But I loved it. Of course, as soon as I started and I was like, oh, fucking hell, it's going to be about women fighting back. I was like, fuck yes, that's for me. And I was surprised that you picked it, but you said you hadn't watched it, right?
Yeah, I hadn't watched it. So like, to me, it was like, I've heard that supposedly, because I've seen season one. I've seen season one and I remember like loving it. And I don't remember if I saw season... I think I've seen season two as well.
Okay.
And then 3, 4, it was just like, I've never heard anything about that. You know, it just seemed like it faded away. And then suddenly I hear a lot of like people talking about season 5. I'm like, why season 5? Must be something like either like really good or something must be like... that surprised everybody. So that's why like I really wanted to see it. And
yeah,
I thought like, hey, if I'm gonna see, I might as well like pick this, so you know, we can both see it and we can talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I was like, super happy, to be honest, because like you, I hadn't seen it, but like I said, as soon as I realized it, the theme, the undercurrents of the entire show, I knew that was for me. That's right up my wheelhouse. I have to watch this. And I wasn't disappointed. I heard some people that said, oh, it's no longer part of like the spirit of Fargo. I will have to disagree. I felt like the vibe is still very much there. We're still isolated in this town in Minnesota, although they do travel between Minnesota and another state, North Dakota. Yep. But I still felt like the environment was kind of the same, and the isolation of it all was the same, especially because that was an important theme, I think, in the Fargo movie, but also in the first few seasons that I watched. There's this theme of isolation, because you're so far north, there's nothing, it's everything is covered in snow, you don't have the same resources you would in a big city. And I think that works as well with abuse. Of course, you're super isolated when you are the victim of an abusive relationship. And even there was like this smaller character that comes back a few times with a dude hitting his wife, and the sheriff has to intervene and be like, oh, it's okay to hit your wife once in a while, but you also have to provide for your wife. You know, he ends up killing this dude later on because it serves a purpose. It was this dude, like, clearly was part of the community or like the city. And because Roy is the sheriff, he feels like he needs to get involved in people's lives.
At his house,
he kills the guy because he's gonna use it as like a baddie. He needs someone to be dead because
scapegoat. Yeah, I think he used him as a scapegoat. Yeah, for somebody.
But it's funny that he tells this guy how to behave when, dude, you've consistently raped and abused women all your life. But in his mind, it's fine because he's following the Bible. And I was like, oh my God, you can't fix someone like that. He's conditioned to think that his purpose is higher than everybody else's because he's like a chosen person by God or whatever. Oh, I just cannot like a good... Yeah.
My only...
prison sentence.
Yeah, my only disappointment, like the biggest one about this season...
All right.
Is the fact that I think when we spoke, was it the last? Fucking can't remember. Was it the last episode or the one before that where we were watching Dark Waters? Was it the last episode
or the Dark one before Waters, that? No, I feel like it was before that. Last time was Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. Yep. So it should be the one before that. Because I said I absolutely love movies, shows, like anything that has like based on a true story.
Right. Loosely based on a true story.
And as much as I tried like Googling it, I wanted to like, after watching it, I'm like, oh, I want to find out more. I want to like, as much as I tried Googling and finding out more information about it, it seems like it's like so loosely based that it's like you can't find anything. So it seems like it's just a line, you know, like where they say, like in at the beginning of every episode, they say that
they change the names and
yeah. It seems like almost like part of the show. You know, it's not. It seems like it's not actually based on a true story.
No.
It seems like that tagline is just to lure people in. It's actually like part of the show. Yeah.
Well,
so that was like my only disappointment that I couldn't find anything, because like that's what usually like picks me, like I love like movie shows that are based on a true story, because I want to know, like when we saw the when we talked about the Dark Waters, you know, I found like a documentary. There's like two documentaries, I think. I found a documentary on the show. I watched the documentary. And, you know, like it was just like, to me, it was like very impressive. You know, like I like live through, like when I see these shows, I like to live through those events, knowing that they are or like were like based on a true story. So it was like my only disappointment is it seems like that.
So you
line
wish that some women
is,
were abused so badly that they would finally.
No, I don't wish that. I wanted to find out, like for example, what happened to Dorothy, because you know, like she at the end she said like, oh, she was like, when she went not to the funeral but to that to the grave of that officer, she's like, oh, yeah, we're now expanding to like different states. So like, her husband is the salesman, but I'm the brains, you know? So I wanted to see like, hey, I was more curious about like, what do they look like? Are they like successful, like running a successful business right now? Like that sort of stuff like interests me.
Yeah.
Like, so like the fact that I couldn't find the information, or the fact that it might not actually be a true story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like a bit disappointing, but you know,
I mean, part of me feels like you could say it's loosely based on, like, abuse is real, so that part for sure isn't invented.
I mean,
after this part happens. I do get what you mean. Like, I feel like if you told me, yeah, but that woman Dorothy really existed and she actually did, like, you know, fought back and got out and avenged, yeah, that would be love. That would be, I don't know about lovely to read because it's a lot of violence, but but I
but it would
what
be a success story, right? If she did went
would...
through this, because like so many women do go through this. So like seeing her, like if this was a true story, like seeing her going from that to become a like successful woman, like you know, this is a real. I think it's a good story, like good. Happy
I know, but
ending,
there aren't
sort of.
Many women who escaped abuse and then managed to build a life afterwards, right? You don't need the dramatic effects of all this, you know, especially a character like Ule Monk. Of course, that's not based in reality. The guy, literally, his story,
maybe,
if
that's
I understood,
why I wanna...
he was like a sin eater. So he ate the sins of like rich, because in the past, like 500 years ago, let's say when someone wealthy died, In order to guarantee for them to go to heaven, someone had to eat their sins, and so they were rid of their sins, because religion, there's no sense in that. And so that's what he did, but then he lived for like 500 years and is still alive at the end of the show. His character is just, of course, that's not real, right? So at that point, you should have guessed.
I don't know.
Oh,
well, that's why I want to find out.
There is Dima on Google. Ule Monk.
Yeah, that's why I want to know. Well, you know, like, we say aliens are not real, but they could be. So that's why I want to know. Maybe this guy is also the real deal. But yeah, I think you know what I mean when I say I like stuff when it's like based on a true story, and I want to know more. And the fact that I couldn't find out more, like, it was a bit disappointing, but yeah, I still love the show.
But to be fair, I think that's a gimmick based on a true story, because I think the movie was loosely based on a true story. I think the first season was sort of a retelling of the movie, so that also was based on a true story. And I think after that, they kind of kept that tagline and tried to build stories that could potentially be true, but not really. I don't really know. But yeah, in every episode started with, this is based on a true story.
Yeah.
And the more I watched, the more I was like, I don't think that's accurate. This guy is 500 years old. What the fuck? But I love this character.
Dude, aliens are real, so.
I think I liked him because he was so binary. He was like, you took something from me, I'll take something from you. That's life. Like, you take, I take. And it was just... It wasn't revenge per se, it just wanted retribution, and once that was given, it would move on. But then I really enjoyed the last episode. So basically, Dorothy is living a life, and the Tillman sheriff guy is in prison, everything seems to be fine, but then that monk character, Munch or Monk, I don't really know, comes back because he hasn't finished business with her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, fuck, yeah. Because that's how we live, right? It's like, I liked you and I give you... What did he say something about the tiger when he frees her at the ranch? He's like, it's not fair to fight a tiger in a cage or something. So yeah, he frees her for her to... And I thought at that point he was like, my debt has been repaid. Kind of thing, because I thought he was the guy who abducted her, so clearly no, but he still wants something from her, because he's like, you still owe me something at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that they had this weird, okay, but first let's have dinner, can you help us cook, and she makes him part of the family for a little bit, and just she's talking about it's time to forgive, like there's a time for retribution, but there's also a time for forgiveness, and this time has come, and you can see the realization in his eyes that for all this time he's been on the planet just doing this balance act of I take, you give, I take, and he realizes actually I can just also forgive myself, be forgiven, and stop this cycle. And I thought that was really touching. But I loved the character. I thought, because at some point he has a vendetta with the sheriff's son, and the sheriff's son is such a dickhead that I wanted him to get I thought he was gonna get killed, to be honest. I didn't realize the guy would only take his eyes, which was even worse, I guess, especially the way he took the eyes, because he was like, with what, with a spoon? I don't really know. And so I love this character because I was like, oh, he's awesome. He seems unbeatable. Nobody can kill him. Also, there's this whole thing where he goes and lives in a house with an old woman.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And he's like, oh, I live here now. All right. But then she gets assaulted by her son, who is an alcoholic, drug addict, and he wants money from his mom. And he... Ule Monk is like, this isn't right. This isn't part of the balance of things. And he goes and beats up the son. I was like, I love you. You like the hand of justice. But he wasn't. He was a bit more twisted than that. But I love this character. I love that face, though. That guy has such a striking... He has striking features. I don't know why, but he works super well on screen. I just love him. But yeah. Overall, I'm so happy that you gave me the show, because I loved so many aspects of it. But mostly the whole thing about, it's definitely a season about women and standing up for what's right, fighting abuse. Sure. And it wouldn't work if the bad people in the show were not good actors. It wouldn't work if you didn't really believe that the... Especially John Hamm's character. If you didn't believe in the characters, it only works if the bad guys are scary and really fucking twisted, and they can play that part really well. Because otherwise, it wouldn't work, and otherwise, you wouldn't understand the fight that the women are fighting. But here, everything works. So yeah, I highly recommend this show. I absolutely loved it. Yeah. It was so good. I can't, yeah. And I didn't know this, but the guy, so the sheriff Whit Farr, the very nice cop who tries to help Dorothy out all throughout, I knew his face was familiar and I couldn't remember where I'd seen him. This guy was in New Girl, that sitcom. I don't know if you remember it. It's kind of old and it wasn't the best, but yeah, he was in there. I thought he was really good. I hope I see more of him on screen doing other things, because he was really good in this. Yeah. Yeah. I was really sad when he didn't make it, because I thought he would kill John Hamm. I thought he would be the one. And I thought that was kind of shit, actually, because I was like, oh, it's not right. I think a woman should kill that dude, you know, the sheriff. Mm-hmm. I felt like he needs to get what he deserves, but it needs to come from a woman because he respects women so little. To him, that would be the ultimate, you know, what's the word? The ultimate...
Payback?
No, just something revenge. You wouldn't... It would be the ultimate revenge for the woman, but for him, it would be the worst thing imaginable.
Okay, yeah,
because he would think a woman has no strength. A woman can't do that. A woman can't... Yeah. I did hate his wife, though, the current wife, was so... And I couldn't understand, but I guess that's part of it. When you are victim of the abuse, you don't always see it as abuse and you kind of learn to live with it, and it's hard for you to understand or maybe change.
No, because I think her, like, based on also, I think, like, the I think last or second to last episode... Where, like, her dad, like, because he lives on a ranch as well, and where Roy slashes his throat, I think, and then that's when she kind of, like, runs away.
Cause she does her run
dad,
away.
Yeah, so her dad looks to be, like, piece of shit as well, so I think she might have just lived with that, like, her whole life, so, you know, like, for somebody who doesn't know better, I guess, or... I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like her, obviously, because she wasn't... It's hard, like... Because when a Dorothy is at the ranch, being captive at the ranch, I would think another woman would help her. I would want, as a woman, if I'm in this situation, I would hope that another woman would see the problem with the situation. Because I wouldn't rely on the man, necessarily, to see that this is abuse, this isn't correct. But I would hope that a woman would feel like this isn't right and there would be a woman code. And because the wife wouldn't do anything, I didn't like her for that, but I also can understand, because it's hard when you are, you know, entrenched in abuse and that's how you live your life. You wouldn't really realize that, you know, there is anything wrong to it. And even if you do, you don't want to admit it. So I think that's where her character was coming from. But of course, that doesn't make her likable for us because she doesn't stand up for what's right. Simple as. But yeah, but interesting character, complicated one, I think. Yeah, but all of the characters are really well written and you spend enough time with them. Even the husband, Dorothy's husband, who doesn't really have a lot going. Like, he's just nice, right? That's his personality. Mm-hmm. But you still get to know him enough and he's still like a character that you care about because he is genuinely a nice person and he loves her and he wants the best for his family. He would even go against his mom, Lorraine, who's so powerful. He would do that for Dorothy. So, you know, he's well written. You understand exactly who he is and what he wants and you still get attached to him, even though he's not a lot on the screen. So yeah, good effort. The writing is top-notch in this one.
All right, so score time.
Ooh, okay, I'm going to give it a high score because I loved it. I kind of...
Ooh, a 9.
Yeah, because it had everything. It had closure, women fighting back and winning, great actors, all of it. Just so, so good. And the setting, like Minnesota looks pretty miserable in winter. But I loved it. 9 out of 10.
All right. I don't know about 9, but I would also give it a quite high. I would say like 8.5. I don't know why would I deduct, but yeah, I think it was good.
8.5 is good.
I think it was good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It was cool. So 9 and 8.5. I guess it's time for layer cake then.
Woohoo!
You're born, you take shit. Get out in the world, you take more shit. Climb a little higher, take less shit. Till one day you're up in the rarefied atmosphere and you've forgotten what shit even looks like. Welcome to the layer cake, son.
Layer cake, then, came out in 2004, so 20 years ago. How do you feel now?
I feel so. I mean, I feel okay, but I do feel that Daniel Craig, he looks much older now, but I guess...
Well, yeah, he's 20 years older than he was in 2004.
Yeah.
Science for you.
Yeah, science for me. Okay.
Yeah. Layer Cake is the directorial debut of Matthew Vaughn, who is now known for films like as a filmmaker, but before he also worked as a producer on films like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels in 1998, Snatch in 2000. He then directed Layer Cake in 2004, Stardust in 2007, Kick-Ass, which I remember that I didn't see Stardust, but Kick-Ass, yes. X-Men First Class, Argyle recently. I don't know if you have seen that one. I have not yet.
Not yet.
He also, and this is interesting, he co-created the Kingsman comic book series. And of course, then that resulted in the movies, the franchise that he directed, produced and co-wrote. The films, so there was Kingsman, The Secret Service, which I think was the first one, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, and then The Kingsman, which was sort of like a sequel that explained how the Kingsman order just came to be. I'm going to give it the pitch just really quickly before I move on to something else. Basically, Layer Cake is about, I want to say a successful dealer, coke dealer, I believe, but it could be other drugs as well. Played by Daniel Craig, who doesn't have a name in the movie. And at some point he does believe that it's time for him to retire. So he would like to retire, get his money and kind of like cut his losses sort of thing. But he gets handed an assignment by his boss, big boss, Jimmy Price. He has to find the daughter of a very influential construction business dude. I think some guy that's really powerful. He's into construction. He's a socialite. But then what's making his life even worse is that there's been a shipment of ecstasy that's been stolen from this group of brutal dealers. And the people that have stolen the shipment are trying to sell it to him. And he's going to get stuck into all of these stories. Basically, that's the plot of the film. Someone trying to leave the drug game, but he can't. What's interesting, though, is that this movie is based on a book that was written by J.J. Connelly in 2000. The book was also called Layer Cake, so not a big discrepancy there. And the guy also wrote a sequel to the book called Viva la Madness. Which I'm going to come back to it because there's something interesting with that one. So the book was published in 2000, and I'm going to give you the pitch of the book so you can see how much of the movie is actually the same as the book. Mm-hmm. The book takes place in London during the 90s, and it's also narrated by a character that doesn't have a name, who is a drug dealer. And he plans on leaving the crime game behind at the age of 30 to live life as a gentleman of leisure. I don't know what that means. But his retirement plan is made complicated by a large shipment of stolen ecstasy the German neo-Nazis who want it back and revenge on anyone they hold responsible for the theft, the unpredictable and often outrageous personalities of his friends, and his boss, Kingpin Jimmy Price, who has charged him with the task of recovering the missing daughter of a wealthy socialite. So, I don't know you, but when you read the plot of the book and the plot of the movie, I would say they changed very little. Literally, that's Nazis. The same story. I don't know if the thing that may have changed is that I don't think that the guys trying to get the ecstasy back are neo-Nazis in the movie, and they're not German for sure. I think they're Serbian Dutch. Or Romanian. They live in the Netherlands, but I don't think they are, because I think they speak amongst each other in Romanian, but I think they're meant to be Serbian. The second novel, called Viva la Madness, was published in 2011 and basically resumes after the first. So only two characters remained, the narrator, so the main guy, and his partner in crime, Mr. Mortimer, aka Morty. It begins in the Caribbean with Morty attempting to recruit the guy without a name to go back to London and to go back to crime, basically. Jason Statham's production company is said to have the rights to produce the sequel, Viva la Madness. And in 2015, it was reported that Viva la Madness could very well be a TV show. But it was in 2015 that they said that, and there's not been a TV show yet. So I wonder if we are ever going to see. And it is said that Jason Statham would have the leading role. So he would have the role basically that Daniel Craig has in the movie, which doesn't really make sense, but we'll talk about that. Guy Ritchie was in place to direct the movie, but then he had other commitments, so he didn't do it. And so Matthew Vaughn was brought on the project. What's interesting is that it kind of was like a chance meeting that convinced Matthew Vaughn to do the movie. He was basically on the train going to Belgium, which is like why I put the anecdote in. So he was on the train to Belgium and he met the novelist J.J. Connolly. And prior to being on this train, Matthew Vaughn had heard that the book would make a very good movie. He hadn't read the book, he hadn't received it, but when he was on the train and he met the guy, and the guy is like, oh, I'm a novelist, and I wrote this book called Layer Cake, and Matthew Vaughn was like, oh, that's interesting, because someone just told me about this, and they talked, and they kind of got along really well. And then at the end, I guess, of the train ride, the novelist, J.J. Connolly, told him, you know what, I'll just send you the book so you can read it, and then, you know, you can decide what you want to do with it. And the day Matthew Vaughn got back to London, or where he lived at the time, there was a copy of the book waiting for him, but it wasn't the copy that the writer sent to him, it was a copy that his friend had sent to him. So like the friend who had told him, oh, this book would make a great movie. So it was kind of like a serendipitous situation where you kind of feel like drawn, this book, I need to make this movie, because there has been too many signs that I should do it. So that's kind of what happened. They started filming in June 2003, mostly in London, because the story takes place in London. So obviously the movie stars... Let me get Daniel Craig as the main character. That doesn't have a name. It also stars George Harris as Morty, Sienna Miller as Tammy, the love interest. There's a few that are interesting to know. So I'm going to say that it's interesting that both Michael Gambon and George Harris appear together in this movie. Can you tell me why? So George Harris is the black guy, the friend, Daniel Craig's, I guess, partner in crime.
Yeah. Why both of them? I don't know. No idea.
Okay, because both of them are together in the Harry Potter franchise. Michael Gambon as Dumbledore, and then George Harris as Kingsley Shacklebolt. He's one of the black wizards that are part of the Order of, like, the Horrors. So he's one of the magicians who are fighting against Voldemort, but he's got a funny outfit. It's really cool. I don't know. You don't know? Have you seen Harry Potter?
Yeah, I think now I kind of loosely remember.
He doesn't work in the school. Like, he's not part of the teachers and stuff. He's more like one of the guys who will come in once Voldemort starts being more powerful.
They kind of like have this escape scene, how they're trying to escape London with like different routes, and
he's part of that group of good guys. It's also interesting that both Daniel Craig and Ben Whishaw are in this movie together, because they would reunite later in Bond movies. Daniel Craig as James Bond, but Ben Whishaw as Q, the guy who makes all the exploding gadgets. The actor who played Duke is called Jamie Foreman, and what's interesting about him is that he's the son of a notorious London gang enforcer, Freddie Foreman. I don't really know why he's an actor now. An interesting thing to be said about Daniel Craig's performance in the movie is that it is being said, I don't know if it's true, but it's his performance in Layer Cake that gave him his major acting casting in as James Bond. Basically, I don't know if he was in the running, but a lot of people have said that his performance in Layer Cake cemented his place in the running, and hence he became James Bond later on. And I can see that because there are scenes where he just walks, but he walks mm-hmm. with such class. I don't know how else to mm-hmm. say. He has such a cool walk, and also his face, like his eyes, everything. I can see why people watch this movie and were like, he would be a great James Bond. Like, mm-hmm. I do understand. He had been in a few movies prior to Layer Cake. He had been in Lara Croft Tomb Raider in 2001. I don't remember. He had been in Elizabeth and Road to Perdition. And he also was in the movie Munich in 2005, so just after Layer Cake, right? But he originally came from the theater world. So, yeah, so basically this movie kind of was the jumping platform he needed to be worldwide known, and how he became James Bond later on. Interesting tidbits. The F word and its derivatives is used 210 times throughout the movie. I think the budget for this movie wasn't a lot of money. It was $6.5 million, and they did $11.9 million at the box office, and I think that's worldwide. It's not a lot of money.
That's shit.
It's not a big movie. Oh, hold on. Worldwide, okay.
Yeah,
11 yeah. Yeah, but it's a good return on investment, right? Because you almost doubled what you put in. And I don't think there was a lot of PR. It wasn't like you spend 300... I don't know what they spend nowadays, actually. A movie like a Marvel movie, they spend easily $300,000. No, more.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think usually, like, these days, it's like whatever the budget, like, double, like, half... No, not half, like... The same amount of money almost goes into marketing the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but so if a movie costs 20 million, like a small movie, I don't think the marketing would be 20 million.
For a small, probably not. But like for big ones, like they want to market them.
So if they spend 200 million on a movie, they will spend 200 million on the marketing?
Yep.
That seems insane.
I think that's what Mother... Yeah, that's... I mean, like, all those, like, world tours, you know, they taking them, you know, like, building, like, sets.
Sure.
Especially for, you know, like, in every big city that they visit, you know, they build some shit just for that. And, you know, it could be, like, they might, you know, employ, like, or fly some jets that would, like, you know, like, so it seems like a big thing, but I think, you know.
It does. In my bank account, that would feel like an all right thing. Yes, 200 million. Yeah, that should be all right. I'll take that. Okay, well, I think it's not a bad score. 11 million for a movie that costs 6, you're all right. I don't think anyone is worried about it. And plus, even if you lost the money, it's not a lot of money, 6 million. It's crazy to say that, but we know how much movies cost nowadays. And the last tidbit is that the title Layer Cake, because I was wondering, I was like, why is it called Layer Cake? Refers to the layers or the levels that the dealer has to go through in order to, like, plot your escape. It's kind of like, I was like, oh, okay, so it's just for him to be, let's say he's at the bottom of the cake and he has to get out by the top, he has to go through all of these layers of problems to get out.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. Well, I have my first question. Had you seen this movie before?
No.
No. Okay, so it was the first time watching.
I've never seen the movie. I've never even heard of it.
Had you seen Guy Ritchie?
Yes.
Snatch.
So okay. That's kind of like my first... When I just saw maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes into the movie, I'm like... This very much looks like a Guy Ritchie movie, especially like that. I think you mentioned at the beginning. What was it?
The Snatch or
two barrel thingy, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. It reminded me of that movie,
of course.
So I'm like, this looks like a Guy Ritchie, but then I'm like, looked it up. I'm like, okay, it wasn't him. So I'm like, okay, so I just like, you know, continued to watch the movie. But yeah, I was just like, at the beginning, I'm like, huh, it looks like him. So I was a bit surprised that it wasn't. But I guess like seeing that it was the producer who worked on...
Yeah, that's it, on, right? It was
on that movie, I'm like, okay, kind of makes sense then.
Yeah, but I don't know what you think, but for me... Those stories of like, and it works particularly well for like UK-based gangsters, but I think the way Guy Ritchie tells his stories of mafia works really well. So for me, when I first watched Layer Cake, of course, I liked it. I just liked the way both Matthew Vaughn and Guy Ritchie tell stories about this underworld of criminals. But it's not super dark. It's not like The Godfather, right? It's not that same seriousness. But it is still serious, and I feel like where Guy Ritchie movies, you can always kind of assume that the good guy will win most of the time. Like be it Snatch or Lock, Stock, or even later on Rock'n'Roller. The good guys kind of always win, not maybe win in the way they thought they would, but they never die. Which, of course, I'm going to spoil this, but it's going to be hard to talk about Layer Cake without spoiling the end. Daniel Craig at the end does get... We don't know if he dies, because that's my point.
So because we don't see him die, we see him like
he's shot
gasping for air and he's like a step away from dying. So, like, to be honest, if you didn't tell me just now that there was a sequel or a script or a book, whatever, I would have thought that he died. But then again, when you said it, and then I thought about it, like, we don't actually see him. Like, you know, like, when you see in the movies a person die, he would be, like, just on the side and, you know... eyes closed or whatever. Like, you can tell when a person dies in a movie. So, and here, as you said it, I thought about it, and we don't actually see him die. As I remember it, but yeah.
No, we don't. But, like, I've always assumed he died the first time I watched it. And to be honest, I was so... not disappointed by the end, because that's the most logical end to a life that you've lived in a criminal... career, right? You most likely are gonna get shot. Like, you're not gonna make it out alive is kind of the moral of the story. But also everybody else around him, everybody that got involved in bad stuff did get a bullet or they got tortured. I forgot, but
well, his gang, the four people who was like closely associated with, didn't die.
Okay, they didn't. I feel like one of the associates was a bit, but to be fair, they were all part of the criminal world. So yeah, they didn't die. But I feel like so the people involved in stealing the ecstasy, they didn't live long. But at the same time, they were all absolute idiots. So like, it was surprising that they would still be alive at that point. His boss, Jimmy, he kills his boss. So he dies as well. So it's like this constant idea that if you lived in that world all your life, you probably are going to die in that world.
Yeah.
But what's upsetting is that he gets shot by the most retarded character of the entire movie. And you're like, of all the people to kill him, this dude, honestly, it's so disappointing for him, I guess, because he's at the top. He's made it through all of the layers. He's on top of the cake. And this little simp dude that comes and like, oh, you stole my girlfriend. Boom. Just fucking retarded. But that, and I didn't see that coming. I never thought he would be the character to do that. Because he was such a nothing person. So
that's usually like, you know, the least expected people are
the most unassuming one. Yeah, for sure. But like, I thought, for some reason, I thought the guy, so the Serbian hitman, or the guy hired to kill him, I thought that would be the guy to come and kill him somehow, because they would realize that they cheated us or something. Because it's much like a Guy Ritchie. Everybody is plotting. There's a lot of double crossing and there's all these deals. And at the end, you think he's been smarter than everyone. He shows you a flashback to his plan and you're like, oh, so they didn't lose the shipment. He was smarter than everyone. And you're well happy for him. And you're like, what, such a cool guy. Plus, it's Daniel Craig. So pleasing on the eye as well. And then he gets shot by this one thing that he overlooked. The fact that maybe by sleeping with someone's girlfriend, he made an enemy. Which, to be fair, it's a smart thing. And it would most likely happen. But I guess we're so used in seeing movies like this where the good guys, and I'm putting quotes because they're not good guys, but the nice ones, they prevail. And he did, but not for long. And I wonder, because it was the first time watching you as well, were you disappointed by the end?
The end, how he got shot.
Or just the fact that he got shot.
I thought that he would just walk away and that's it. You know, like he would, you know, ride off into the sunset. I thought that's how it, like the movie would end. Like the, you know, like you said, the good guy, you know, in quotes, wins. So I didn't expect him to get shot. I definitely didn't expect him to get shot even by that Sydney guy.
Sydney, that's his name, yeah. Sydney.
So it was definitely unexpected. But like, I feel like there was like a few parts to the movie that like I couldn't really understand in general. So I was like, to be honest, I was a bit confused about the movie. It was like, yeah.
Why?
First, like, I wasn't sure why that, because it seems like that girlfriend, Sydney's girlfriend, to some extent, she was important, I guess, but I couldn't see why she was important.
She wasn't really. Like in the movie, she only is kinda important because it's because of her. It's lust that is going to be his undoing, because he lusted for her. He's going to get shot later on. But her character doesn't affect any other part of the movie, apart from his death, which is a big part of the movie.
Yeah, it could be just the lust, but like, I didn't understand why she was like in there.
She wasn't in the movie at all. You feel like the movie would work as well without her?
For example, like that scene that he, when he almost slept with her, but then he got like kidnapped.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand.
Because he's like, oh, that's gonna happen. She gets all sexy in the bathroom, and then he, Even when they knocked on the door, I was like, are you retarded? Of course, don't open the door. Definitely it's bad news. Like in a hotel, you haven't ordered anything. Why are you opening the door? And of course, you get kidnapped. I thought that was an all right scene.
Yeah, I wasn't like the whole like girl, that girlfriend thing. I wasn't sure. I didn't quite understand. Was it really like, was that his boss, Jimmy? Was he actually a cop informant or was it like a setup?
Was it set up from that builder guy
because he was trying to like get rid of him in some way.
No, because I think, because the Jimmy, who, I think he was an informant because they talk about the number of years that some of the other guys have spent behind the bars. And clearly we understand that Jimmy is responsible for that. And that matches up with, we know that Morty was in jail at some point and for the amount of time that was mentioned. And also the other guy, the redhead dude, I forgot his name, Duke is the one that steals the ecstasy, right?
Yeah.
Gene is the guy who lends him a gun. Who is like the Irish sort of... Yeah.
Is he a redhead?
Yeah, he's got very curly red hair. He's also Irish.
I don't remember.
Do I need to say this again?
Okay, if you say so.
Okay, maybe red hair, maybe not, but definitely Irish. What was I going to say? Oh, he also was in prison, and he mentions it, and he talks about it with the protagonist that doesn't have a name. And so all of that matches up with what we hear on the tape, and what Jimmy says, oh, give this guy this many years, give this guy other... So I think he really was an informant, but I also think clearly that Michael Gambon... So the rich socialite definitely wanted Jimmy out of the game. And he figured, you know what, this newcomer, Daniel Craig, might be able to help me out. So there was definitely double crossing going on. But I do think that Jimmy was an informant. Both words do work. That's confusing. So for me, oh, did you also notice that Tom Hardy was in this? But like super
young.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's so
Tom
young.
Hardy and Bern Gorman.
Who the fuck is Bern Gorman?
What?
Oh, yes. I love him. But he's... what is he mostly most famous for?
It's like some... Yeah, he played in some villain recently.
He has a face for it.
He
was in Dark Knight Rises as well.
He played some villain in something. Oh, fuck, I can't remember what it was. I think it was like one of the Game of Thrones. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, he has like a face of a fucking villain.
He survives, right? Because he flees when the cops arrives. He takes a boat. Yeah. So I think he makes it out, which is insane because he was part of the guys. Who stole the ecstasy from the bad Serbian gangsters. But what I think Matthew Vaughn did the same way that Guy Ritchie did with his movies, his gangster ones, is that he makes you like the characters. Fair enough, they're all criminals, but there are degrees, right? So you could just be a coke dealer and then you can be the bad guy who kills a bunch of people. There's a difference, right? So he picks characters and he writes them in a way that makes you feel like I root for them. I like these ones. They're fun. Even though they do very violent, reprehensible things. Because even his friend Morty, he beats someone up at a cafe. Like, you know when they go get breakfast at those very traditional London things that are open 24/7 and you can just get sausages and beans and stuff at any time of the day. Welcome to England. Anyways, he beat someone up so badly and you still like him later on because he's a good character. You know what I mean? It's hard to make an audience like someone who can commit such despicable acts, basically. And I think Matthew Vaughn did this very well. You can definitely tell he's a student of Guy Ritchie because the vibe is clearly the same. Where I think he wanted to differentiate himself is like by adding that scene at the end where he kills the character, or like, well, from what we know, because we haven't seen the sequel, I haven't read the book, so the way I read the movie is that at the end he dies. And I think at that point, you know, this isn't a Guy Ritchie movie. And I think maybe Matthew Vaughn wanted that. He wanted to not be known as the Guy Ritchie number two. He wanted to do something different that would maybe feel like a Guy Ritchie movie, but that were that had a different personality to it. And I think if you didn't have that death scene at the end, we would just think, oh, it's a Guy Ritchie movie, even though it's not his name, but clearly that's Guy Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you stand on that. I think that's probably part of why he did that. I haven't read the book, so I don't know if in the book maybe that happens as well. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you know, with book, non-book, like, it... Because I don't know if, like, how much did he know after reading the first one and making the movie? Did he actually know those... Maybe he did know that it was the second one.
No, because the second one came out in 2014, I think, or...
Okay, so the second one came out way after the... So maybe at that point he did think that
the guy died,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, but I think it's like gutsy, because you know that a lot of people love the movie, hate the end. So if you ask some people that like this movie, they'll say, oh, I love it, but I hate the end, so I always turn off the movie before the final shot, because they don't like the fact that his character that you followed through thick and thin managed to get on top and then just died the most stupid way as well, like, because Sydney was upset that his girlfriend loved him. And I think I was part of these people. For the longest time, I didn't rewatch this movie because I remembered loving the movie, hating the end. And I think rewatching it this time, it changed a little bit, because I guess I understood the intent behind the ending, but mm-hmm. also part of me knows, okay, but it's a sequel, so maybe he's not dead. So it's kind of open to interpretation. You can assume he's dead, but like you said, we don't see him die. So it's possible he didn't die. He seems pretty in bad shape, though, because, yeah. But yeah. How do you think it compares to Guy Ritchie? To Guy Ritchie's other movies.
I don't know if you're a fan
or not of Guy Ritchie.
I am to a degree. I don't like everything, but I do like enough of his stuff to tell that, like, if whatever he's gonna release, I'm still gonna watch it. Not necessarily liking it, maybe, but I'm still gonna be curious enough to see it.
Yeah.
It was like, I think, what was the last one that he made? It was something like King
the
Arthur
Gentleman.
Or some. Oh. No.
He did King Arthur, he did Aladdin, he did The Gentleman.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, so he did a bunch of like stuff, and like, I remember watching like that King Arthur, which wasn't like
that
his
wasn't
typical.
Very good.
Huh? Yeah. And I was like, but I was still like curious enough to see it, you know? So that's why, like, I'm still gonna watch. Like, I'm not necessarily like everything that he made, but I'm still curious enough about his stuff.
Would you say the same about Matthew Vaughn? Have you seen loads
like,
of his stuff? Or?
So I had to look him up and like to see exactly what he produced versus like directed. So if we're telling like if I'm looking from his director's stuff, it's like it's like mix, because I mean I've never seen Stardust with the Kick-Ass. It was good. It wasn't like
the first one was good. The second one was terrible.
But I don't think he made the second one, did was he?
I think he did. Or maybe not, okay. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was someone else. No, I think he did. Because it's kind of his intellectual property as well, so... But I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe he didn't direct the second one. I did love The Kingsman, the first one. I didn't like the second one so much. And I didn't really enjoy the sequel thing, The Kingsman.
I haven't seen Kingsman. Yeah, I haven't seen Kingsman. I didn't really like the second one, but I did love the first one. So that's why I'm like, it's like a mix of stuff. I don't know anything about Argyle. Like, for Argyle, you know, the trailer looks okay, but like, Hollywood learned how to make trailers often enough, like a lot of shit, like, or everything's given out in trailer, and then you're watching the movie, I'm like, okay, I kind of know, or you watch the trailer and you're like, okay, I know exactly what's gonna happen. So
yeah,
so I'm not sure of him as a, you know, director. It's like, to me, it's like a mixed bags of stuff. Not everything there, you know, I think, like, among the stuff that I've seen, only that layer cake that stands out to me, like, very much something that's like a Guy Ritchie, whereas everything else, I think, I wouldn't say so. I think it's, you know, he has his own, after that, maybe, I think his own, like, style and stuff. It was, like, just that layer cake, which... Again, like, when, as soon as, like, 20 minutes in, I'm like, okay, this is, maybe even less than that, I'm like, okay, is this Guy Ritchie movie that I've never seen, or...
Yeah,
so...
Because it's very reminiscent, and I think what probably happened, that's not the info that's out there, but because Guy Ritchie was presented, so he was the one that was meant to direct this, and then he had to drop out because of other commitments, so I think maybe Guy Ritchie... suggested Matthew Vaughn,
because
they were friends. They worked together on previous Guy Ritchie's movies, and I think they got along. And I think what happened is that Guy Ritchie said, "Well, I have someone who could do this for you." I think with the idea that Matthew Vaughn would be able to replicate Guy Ritchie's style of filmmaking, because that's what worked for this specific, you know, type of movie, like criminal underworld in London. That's very, very niche, and that's mostly what Guy Ritchie excelled at the time. So I think possibly Guy Ritchie said, okay, this guy could do it. And I guess Matthew Vaughn wanted to probably direct something, and maybe he read the book and was like, actually, yeah, this works for me. But I think that's why after that, he went more towards projects that he wanted to make, which are not at all like these, like gangster movies. But I think what he did, though, and I know he emulates a lot Guy Ritchie, but to me, I just love those movies. I love Snatch. I love Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I love Rock and Roller, and I love The Gentleman. I've said it. I love all these four movies. I'm not so sure on Aladdin and King Arthur and other weird stuff that Guy Ritchie has done, but I know that when he does crime in London, it works. It just does. Yeah, and I think Matthew Vaughn did this super well. And I think he brought his personality to it to an extent. It's very... I know what you mean when you say, within 10 minutes, I thought this is a Guy Ritchie movie. And I feel like a lot of people felt that when it came out in 2004. I remember watching it and just thinking, oh, that's Guy Ritchie. And then the end happened, and I was like, that isn't Guy Ritchie. And that's how I knew. I really enjoy this movie. I think for me, what brings the movie to another level, it's Daniel Craig's performance. Because I don't know you, but for me in 2004, I didn't know that actor at all. I know he had done a few things because I've read that, but I don't remember him from these other movies. Whereas in this one, it's impossible to not see Daniel Craig. He steals every scene that he's in.
Yeah, I mean, he's good in this, and then, like, there were a few scenes in the movie when I'm watching it. I think he was, like, walking in through a corridor.
Yeah.
No, it's like walking through a corridor and then having a gun, and, like, the camera kind of, like, pointed at him. I'm like, oh, this looks exactly like James Bond.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I've seen any of his earlier, or maybe if I did, it wasn't like very memorable to me before James Bond. I think to me, like, James Bond, where majority of people discovered him, and even like right? You look at the numbers that the movie did worldwide, right? 11 million, mm-hmm. which means not a lot of people actually saw the movie. So I think like majority people probably discovered him after, like during James Bond, not before James Bond. But like here you can see like you said at the beginning, like why they picked him. Mm-hmm. And there were a few scenes that like...
For sure. It's like an audition for James Bond.
Yeah.
Just the way... I think it helps that Matthew Vaughn, I guess, framed the shots in a specific way where you could really see him mm-hmm. ooze class and walk through a corridor, like you said, with a gun. Just... It's literally... And I don't know if they did that thinking, or maybe... I don't know at what point people were looking for the next James Bond. Maybe it started before 2004, and maybe... Daniel Craig was already maybe in the running, but not very high up on the list. And mm-hmm. maybe they thought, you know what, we could do this in a way that puts you so much in the foreground that, you know, it could be an audition for James Bond mm-hmm. sort of thing. I don't know, but it looks like it. And I agree with you. There are specific shots where you're like, that's literally him walking like James Bond at the, you know, the intro mm-hmm. thing with the, yeah. So, but he's so magnetic, like, oh. I just, you can't take your eyes off him, mostly because he has very blue eyes and it's very fascinating. Mm. but I think everybody else brings a lot as well. I would say with you, Sienna Miller, I think her character isn't that important, but I think it matters because it is the one thing that he didn't foresee. So if you don't have her in the movie, there is no one... that has a good reason to shoot him at the end. Like, how do you make that happen? I don't know. So I guess you need her for that, but it's a very small role. I like all of these friends. I love Jean, the Irish, maybe red-haired, maybe not, guy. I think because I like that actor a lot, and I think, I always like to see him in a movie. George Harris is another one I'm happy to see in a bigger role than he is used to, maybe, because for me, I mainly know him from Harry Potter. Mm. I'm so cultured. But I think everyone works super well. And I love a cool gangster story, but with like, not just dark, you know, because of course that world isn't a pleasant world. You could film it very realistically and make it super dark and oppressive and just not something that you come out thinking this was a breath of fresh air. So I like that approach and I'm very sensitive to it and it works really well for me. So yeah, I really enjoy this movie. And I think at the time, the reason, I guess in Belgium, because we're so close to the UK, if something worked super well in the UK, we would soon enough get like VHS or DVDs in our area as well. And I remember there was this like chatter about this movie. Everyone was like, have you seen it? It's so good. Because we were like teenagers, so we loved Guy Ritchie. It was, oh, have you seen Snatch? It's so good. And of course, when Layer Cake came out, it was... something that people were talking about, and I remember watching it and thinking at the end makes it kind of better in a way because more realistic. How often do you just come out unscathed from this criminal underworld? But at the same time, disappointing because I love the character, but that's the whole point, isn't it? Of course, if they mm-hmm. kill someone else you don't care about, like Michael Gambon, in this movie, Michael Gambon, I love you. Sorry, no offense. I love Dumbledore. So I don't know. This movie, for me at least, has an aura of just this little gem of a movie that not many people knew, but that was so good and so well made, and probably because it was so reminiscent of what Guy Ritchie made at the time that we loved because we were young, and it seemed, oh, it's so cool. Look at them. Stealing drugs and guns and just being fun. But yeah, but it's interesting for me because for you it was the first time seeing it, and maybe you're too old, I guess. I don't know, because I don't feel like you loved it. I think you were fine with it.
Yeah, I was fine with it. I wasn't
oh no,
I wasn't in love with it. I think it didn't really impress me enough to...
No.
It was a good movie. Honestly, it was a good movie. I'm glad that I've seen it. You know, because like sometimes when you watch something new that's old that you may have, maybe should have, you're like, oh shit, I watched it now and it's kind of shit, a waste of time. I don't feel that.
Okay.
But so I did like the movie. I'm glad that I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like super like, whoa, you know, I must watch it again or...
Oh, no. No. Okay. It's a little bit sad. But I get it. Oh, I think
I'm not sad about, like, honestly, like, I'm not sad about, like, the movie, watching it. I'm glad that I
thought you really would like it. But to be fair, I wasn't sure that you liked Guy Ritchie. So... Yeah. Of course, if you don't like Guy Ritchie, this isn't going to work for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I think because it's kind of a standalone thing as well, there's not been any sequels. Even though Jason Statham is like interested, there has not been a series and there hasn't been a sequel. So because it's his own little thing, I don't know. For me, it has a special place. I think it's a little gem that people overlook a lot. Mm. Parts of me... I feel like I like Matthew Vaughn, and I'm with you in thinking that some of his movies, recent ones, I haven't been that great, but I do think he has a vision behind every single project. He has a vision, and I appreciate that. I want someone to create stuff with a vision. I don't want them to just copy-paste a template.
Mm-hmm.
And now part of me is wondering whether this one, for me, might be the best Matthew Vaughn, but is it because it's kind of like a template? Maybe he used Guy Ritchie's template and made this movie, mm-hmm. with adding stuff that's more like him, but not a lot. And when we see what he does when he has no template, maybe that's a bit much. But at the same time, I really enjoyed the first Kingsman.
Kingsman was good. Yeah,
exactly. Kingsman and I really liked the... I liked it. X-Men First Class was a very good effort. It's not my favorite X-Men by a lot, but it was a good reboot of a franchise that had died. So I think he is talented. I haven't seen Argyle, so I'm not going to speak on that. I heard reviews that were not positive, though, so I think I'm going to rent it when it comes out on a platform.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm still interested in his career, but I'm always going to wonder whether Layer Cake was so good because he... And I don't know if Guy Ritchie was involved, let's say as a consultant, but I feel there's a lot of Guy Ritchie in this movie. And I wonder if Matthew Vaughn, if he had started straight off with a movie that was his own, would he have had more money to do other things later on? I don't know. But then again, the first Kick-Ass was great. So he's a great guy to bring a breath of fresh air to something. But then I feel like whenever he does a sequel, it doesn't work. So maybe he should just do standalone stuff. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the sequel for Layer Cake. But I think if it to ever come out and for it to be, I think, successful, Daniel Craig has to play in a sequel. Otherwise...
Yeah, but Daniel Craig is old now.
Yeah, but, you know, like, depending on the story, again, because I don't know the story, yeah, maybe it's like, hey, it. 20 years in the future, like, how he, you know, does he still, like, gangster life or did he escape it? So whatever, like, the book is and whatever the story is. Because, I think, like, Daniel Craig... Like, look, you put him into also something new and he can stand out. Like, because his recent stuff, you know, it was that Knives Out that came out. Like, the.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that, again, the first one was great. The second one.
Yeah, the second one was shit. Kind of like. So that's what I'm saying. So if you put him into something new, it might work. So maybe, I think, like, to me, some of the things that saved the movie for me, right? Mm-hmm. Was I think like Daniel Craig as an actor, like the main actor here, he was like, it was 100%. Really good. So like, and like all these things, maybe. So I see if the second movie were to come out and if it to be maybe try and do good, I think Daniel Craig maybe save it because I think I mean, Statham is also old, right? He's not...
Statham doesn't age. He's still 25. Have you seen The Beekeeper? Like, he does look the same. He's been looking the same for the last 15 years.
I think it's the baldness.
It's the baldness for sure, but it's also like he's still pretty spry, right? I don't know
how many out, probably, of his stunts. Right?
Yeah, but no. Yeah, Jason, but I can't imagine a sequel to this with like Jason Statham. I don't think that's the energy. You need someone with... Oh, but Jason Statham, I love him. But you need someone with more class. But then again, he's class in a way. Oh, I don't know. It's tricky because I love Jason Statham.
No, it would be
but
bad.
I agree with you that Daniel Craig brings something to the screen because he is striking. It's because his eyes are so blue and the way he walks, the way he carries himself, this guy oozes class. Is just very mesmerizing to look at. So it works really well for him in this movie. And I don't think Jason Statham would bring the same energy to the sequel. But again, anything with Statham's name, I'm like, yes, of course, I'll watch this. Love The Beekeeper, so good.
It was can't say good. Anything, I haven't seen it. So
it's good fun, it's good action. Some people get what they deserve.
I haven't even seen the trailer. I saw a poster for the movie.
Yeah.
And I saw the name. I'm like, okay, I'm not interested in this like at all.
No, he doesn't make honey for like an hour and a half. The beekeepers are like special forces people.
Okay.
He is. That's what's so good. He's an actual beekeeper, but he's also a retired beekeeper, which is like a special.
Okay, so he was a special agent that retired and wanted to do beekeeping for.
Yeah.
This is so like too predictable.
It's so believable. I believe in this straight away. No, it's so good. And then it's like his mentality is like the beekeepers, what they did, the specials, not the people making the honey, the other beekeepers, they maintain the balance in the hive, they protect the hive being society. It's so good. There's so many.
Zero interest.
It's a good
I think if I'm ever to watch it, it would be if you pull it out of your magic jar.
It's not in the jar yet. This can be amended. But yeah, I guess we could do the ratings because if we start talking about Beekeeper, that's not the point. I think I enjoyed Fargo more this week, like for this matchup. For me, I love Layer Cake, but I enjoyed Fargo more. And I think I would give Layer Cake 8.5. I will give him 8.5. Just because I can't deny the fact that when I first saw it many, many years ago in 2004, I loved it. And I would have given it more than 8.5, I think, at the time. So now I'm going to go down a bit, but not too much.
Yeah, you think if you were seeing it for the first time...
I don't know. Because I loved, like I said...
Between the two, I mean, like, right? Because you're now trying to compare watching it the second time. But if you were to watch it the first time, like Fargo and this, do you think this would win?
I would give it 8.5. No, yeah. I don't think so. I think the themes in Fargo are more important to me. So I think I loved it more for that reason. Yeah. So, but in terms of filmmaking, Layer Cake has nothing wrong. I recommend it highly. So I don't want to give it a bad score at all. I think between 8 and 8.5 is where I am. I want to give it 8.5 because I'm feeling generous today. But I would probably oscillate. So sometimes it would be just 8 and tomorrow it's 8.3. So I'll give it 8.5 today, though.
All right. To me, you know, again, I'm glad I watched it, but I wasn't super impressed about the movie.
Oh, my Lord.
I think Daniel Craig, he saved whatever the score may have been.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So, like, look. Looking at the IMDb score, right? It's 7.3.
Oh, okay.
So the score is not like super duper high. I mean, Sevens no. is actually like a good, like it's a good movie. Anything that has a seven, it's
it's good.
A good movie, right? So I would stick with the seven ish. Maybe not 7.3, you know, like since, you know, I am watching it for the first time, you know, like it's also that comparison, like a bit to the Guy Ritchie, and like the fact that there's like some of those like things that I mentioned, I couldn't understand like why, what, so, I don't know. I want to give it a high, I want to give it something that's higher than 7.3, but I don't want to give it like, too high.
But okay, give it 7.5.
0.5, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do 7.5.
Yeah, but I think for me, the writing, because the much like Guy Ritchie's movies, what's important in those is the dialogues. And I think they're well written. And they are, the movie is, it's a great watch. You're not, yeah. Well, maybe you were bored, but I'm never bored at any point. I think the dialogues are all good.
I wasn't bored. Again, because I like those, like, if we're comparing it to Guy Ritchie, I like those movies that the comparison, right, that the one that we're comparing them to, like mm-hmm. those gangsters. So I do like all, I've seen all of his movies and I like those movies. Yeah, it's just something was off here. Like, maybe
yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair. It's your, yeah. You know, rating. You're allowed to give it whatever. But yeah, but it's a good score. If you give it more than seven, it's not yeah. like it's a recommendation for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I would recommend. I'm not gonna watch it the second time probably, but okay. for the first time, if you haven't seen it, watch it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I agree with that. I'll give it a bit more, but yeah, personal thing. Cool. So for today, I think for me, Fargo was the best of the two. I loved both, though. It was a pleasant thing. It was really fun to watch both things because I enjoyed both. I think Fargo, however, I guess the message resonates a lot more with mm-hmm. me, so I'll pick that one.
Yeah, me too.
And I highly recommend Fargo season 5. Yep. It was really good. I guess picks for next time, then. Do you want to go first or I go first?
No, let's do yours first because I think you're going to be very surprised by mine.
Okay. I'm twirling.
Stop.
Okay. Oh my god. It's not my pick. The Fast and the Furious, the original.
Ooh, okay, yeah. Because I was afraid you're going to say
the best one, number 5?
No, I was afraid you're going to say the newest one.
Oh, it was so fun. I haven't seen it. And Dante, enchanté. Love it. Yeah, the Fast and the Furious original. Oh god.
Yeah, thank you. I think I haven't seen them in a very long time. Like years.
No, the first one for a year is not a long time, Dima.
Years. It's a long time. All right. Yeah, years. Like as in at least 5 years, maybe no, way more. 1, 2, 3 for sure. Okay, so my pick for you, the suspense, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, fuck my life. No. Oh, God.
We're talking the original 1971.
Oh, my fucking, I hate old movies. Oh, great. Jesus, fuck. Fun, who's in this? Not Timothy Chalamet, I bet.
No.
Willy Wonka, 1971, you said? Yep.
Yeah.
Gene Wilder, yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. Oh, fucking hell. All right. God, I'll give it a 0 already. It's like, we don't even need to record the podcast.
So I take it you haven't seen it?
No, I have not.
Good. I have not seen it as well.
Oh, why the fuck did you pick this?
Good question. I thought
at least you liked it or something.
It was weeks ago, actually. I mean, you may or may not have. It's been like in the news recently. There was a thing in Scotland.
Yes, the scammy thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't because of that. It was like, we actually picked this weeks ago. I don't remember. I was scrolling through like one of those streaming apps and it just popped. And I was like, I don't know why, but it was like, oh fuck, I've never ever actually seen that movie. It could have been like a popping up because the Timothée Chalamet one came out, and yeah, maybe it was like because of that, maybe it was like recommending. Because I haven't seen any, because I mean, we might talk about next time, but like there's a bunch of those Willy Wonka's movies. I haven't seen any of them. So I was like, you know, if I'm gonna watch any, I might as well start from the beginning. So,
okay.
1971.
Okay. Then yeah, cool. Willy Wonka.
I think it's gonna be another fun one. It's gonna be a fun one. Like, you know, like we really like to pick like movies that like super hard to compare versus. Yeah. So this is gonna be another. And Vin Diesel versus Gene Wilder.
Versus Vin Diesel. Oh Lord. Oh. All right. Cool. Well, then I guess that's it for today.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And until next time.
Until next time. Bye.